A new documentary explores the life of filmmaker Stanley Kubrick. Kubrick directed Dr. Strangelove, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and Full Metal Jacket, in which a U.S. Marine colonel confronts a soldier in Vietnam.
Marine, what is that button on your body armor?
A peace symbol, sir.
Where'd you get it?
I don't remember, sir.
What is that you've got written on your helmet?
Born to kill, sir.
You write born to kill on your helmet and you wear a peace button. What's that supposed to be, some kind of sick joke?
No, sir.
What is it supposed to mean?
I think I was trying to suggest something about the duality of man, sir.
The what?
The duality of man, the Jungian thing, sir.
Whose side are you on, son?
The documentary Stanley Kubrick, A Life in Pictures, plays some of Kubrick's home movies. In one, you hear him barking at his daughter, "Get out of the shot! Get out of the shot!" This native New Yorker was a demanding director. With some films, he directed hundreds of retakes until he saw what he wanted. Sometimes, he never did. When he died in 1999, Kubrick left many unfinished projects, including AI, due out this summer with Steven Spielberg directing instead. Between projects, Kubrick retreated to his English country estate and almost never spoke in public. But Kubrick's widow helped to make this documentary. The other day, Christiana Kubrick visited Los Angeles to give the kind of interview her husband shunned.
I'm doing it because, as you know, there were a lot of stupid stories written about Stanley, partly, you know, or all because he didn't give many interviews.
Did you ever say to him, Stanley, don't be such a recluse, get out there, talk to people, they love you?
No, I knew that he really disliked it. He had, when he was a young man, done it several times and felt each time that he had hurt himself rather than helped. And because he's now dead, I like doing this strange thing. I suppose because widows like speaking about their dead husbands a lot.
You said you feel like you're correcting the record here, in a sense.
I am. I have, through the documentary and wherever people ask me, said that Stanley was not some horrible nerd sliming around a dark house being disgusting with people. He was accused of such silly things like shooting tourists in his garden and offering them money when they started to bleed. He was very private, but that doesn't mean he was a recluse. He was the very opposite of a recluse. He was very gregarious, very funny, and we were a very well-entertained family in every sense.
You met Stanley Kubrick more than 40 years ago now, I suppose.
45 years ago.
He was directing one of his early great films, a film called Paths of Glory.
Yes. And he came to Germany to do that.
And you tried out for a part in that film?
No, he saw me on television, and he was looking for a girl to sing in the end of the film. And so he called my agent, and that's how I met him.
What intrigued you about him?
Everything. The tremendous energy, and his he had an intelligent face, and also said eyes I thought to be very beautiful.
You were in a scene in Paths of Glory, which is, for those who haven't seen it, a war film. It's about World War One. Nearly all the characters are men, soldiers, who are going through a brutal and senseless series of events. And at the end, your character is kind of dragged on stage. A German woman, a sort of a prisoner almost, is pulled on stage and told to sing for these soldiers. It becomes an extremely moving scene.
Da ließ all sein Hab und Gut und eilte seinem Herzliebchen zu. Ach, bitte, Mutter, bring ein Licht. Mein Liebchen stirbt, ich seh es nicht. Das war nur Mut und Rose, dem unser Mädchen ein ganzes Jahr.
I'm curious if you remember shooting that scene, how it went, how many takes you had to do.
Oh, yes, I remember quite clearly. Stanley had written it as a lyrical note for the end of what is a scream. The entire film is, you know, a huge anti-war scream. He shot the film in sequence, so I had been hired months before. So he had met me long before it actually then came to the shooting of it. And so we were already living together. So we had tried out the scene at home, as it were, and he wanted to know what is the kind of song that everybody would sing.
He asked you to name the song.
Well, we tried several, and I said, this is the one everybody would know. And he also liked the melody, and it's like Johnny Come Marching Home. It's a very poignant, simple melody. So it went fairly quickly. We didn't...
Just a few takes?
Yeah, just a few.
I want to ask about the reception of one particular film, Clockwork Orange. Can you recount for me what happened when that film was released in England and also in the United States?
Well, it had extremely good reviews at first, and it was a great success. And then, because it plays in England, every single crime committed from then on was blamed on Clockwork Orange.
Let me just say briefly, for those who haven't seen that, Clockwork Orange, if I were going to summarize grossly here, is about a futuristic world and the experiences of a number of extremely violent young men. And there are a lot of beating and raping scenes that are depicted in this film.
Yeah, then the newspapers blew it up and it became... Oh, ridiculous. And we had a lot of threats on Stanley's life and on ours, and the police came, and it was very unpleasant.
When these stories got into the front pages of the newspapers, how did they affect Stanley Kubrick?
He was upset. It's such a complicated topic of how much does art influence a person. And... Warners were very kind to stop the film and allow Stanley to stay living in England.
Knowing that people didn't always understand what Kubrick was trying to do, that it didn't always work for people, I wonder, did it get harder and harder for him as the years went on to take the risk of finishing a movie and putting it out to the world?
He selected his stories very, very carefully. That was the reason there were such long pauses between films, which made him very sad. He did a long preparation for Napoleon, which couldn't be done. Then he did, because another Napoleon film had been unsuccessful, and so he couldn't get the finance. And later on, he tried to do a film about the Holocaust, and there he just ran into a total depression, reading up on everything, and he thought he just simply didn't know how he would do it.
As I understand it, he decided to back away at the same time that he discovered that Steven Spielberg was
shooting because
Schindler's List.
Yes, so he thought that wasn't a sensible thing to do.
And having backed away from his own project that had taken a lot of his time, he then began another project, which has become known as a film called AI, and he called up Steven Spielberg and said, I want you to direct this film?
Yeah, they talked about it. They spoke on the phone often.
Spielberg and Kubrick seem to me like two very different directors.
Yes, and I think that the two knew that they were on the opposite end of things, and Spielberg works with a huge crew and brings out a film in a very short time, and Stanley with a very small crew and take a long time. So in temperament they were totally different, also of course in age.
Why would Kubrick turn to Steven Spielberg?
He liked him, and he thought that he could do AI very well. At the time, the latest computer inventions weren't there yet, and Stanley thought, oh, it's going to be technically too difficult, and gave up and thought, well, Steven is the man to do it. Of course, when he died, Steven was very much the logical person to do it, and I'm very happy he does. It would have been very sad to see a very good story just rot.
What is left in Kubrick's works that we haven't seen or haven't read among his papers, among the footage that he shot?
Oh, there's loads. We have to go through it all. Some old stories that he gave up on, and I also found some very sweet scripts when he was very young that he'd written, and, you know, lots of stuff.
Would you expect that there will be other Kubrick scripts that will become somebody's movie in the future?
There might be some. There might be some that could be made now, and it would be very exciting, and it would be lovely if he worked very hard on Napoleon, if something could come with that. He really loved that. He liked stories about people who made great plans and then how they go wrong.
Christiana Kubrick, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Okay. Bye.
The documentary Stanley Kubrick, A Life in Pictures, appears on the cable channel Cinemax this week. It's also part of a new DVD set of his films.
That documentary includes a photograph of a movie camera on an outdoor set. It perches on a pedestal 20 feet above the ground. Director Stanley Kubrick sits next to the camera in a side saddle seat, his legs dangling in the sky.